we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, November 25th, 2016. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined here in studio by my animal-loving vegan co-host, Sinead Saunders.
Hello.
Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And our guest, Carrie Badesky.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in, Carrie.
Thank you.
So today in our show, we feature two interviews. First, Wayne Shung, Direct Action Everywhere co-founder, will discuss the recent open rescue and investigation of a so-called humane turkey farm, which has provided the White House with turkeys for over 50 years. In the video taken at the farm, we see horrific, overcrowded living conditions and badly injured turkeys. Then we will chat with a Vancouver woman who's here in studio today, Carrie, who has recently made the transition to a vegetarian lifestyle and we hope may commit to a fully compassionate lifestyle by going vegan. Carrie has watched the documentaries Earthlings and Food Choices, which have been part of her inspiration to a more compassionate and healthy lifestyle. Many of us forget what thoughts we had when we transitioned to a vegan lifestyle, and this interview is an opportunity to recall what feelings, hesitations, or questions we had back then. So stay tuned in about half an hour for those interviews. Many of you know of the Canadian legal advocacy group Animal Justice. We've had one of their lawyers on our show a few times, Anna Pippis. Their lawyers lead the legal fight for animals in Canada and work to pass strong new animal protection legislation, push for prosecution of animal abusers, and fight for animals in court. This week, they filed a false advertising complaint with federal regulators over Dairy Farmers of Canada ads that falsely claim dairy is required to prevent osteoporosis, colorectal cancer, and hypertension, when research actually shows that dairy is not a necessary part of the human diet and may even be harmful. You can't go anywhere in Vancouver right now without seeing these ads plastered on bus stops, on buses, and on billboards. Clearly, the dairy industry is feeling the financial losses as people transition to a vegan lifestyle. Sinead, you did some research on this.
Yeah. Well, I did a bit of reading, and I mean, and you know, after all these years, it's not unknown for that dairy is associated with a lot of these things that they're claiming it will help prevent. Actually. Dr. Walter Willett, who is the chair of Harvard's Department of Nutrition and the professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, he has said that high dairy consumption is actually associated with increased risk of prostate and ovarian cancer. And it's associated with all these other things as well, heart disease and high blood pressure. So these ads have been driving me crazy.
Yeah, so why are we seeing these ads on buses? I'm looking at one right now. It's got the Heart and Stroke Foundation's logo on it, and it says, help improve heart health by drinking milk. And actually, it looks like there's a big glass. I'm not sure if that's milk or yogurt. It looks really thick. Anyways, looks like a lot of suffering right there in that glass with some berries. So what's the deal there? Like, why are these nonprofit organizations that advocate for heart health advocating to consume dairy in this day and age where I feel like it's a common known fact that dairy is scary and it's not good for you?
Yeah, well, actually, as a matter of fact, the ads are disguised as public health announcements, but the Dairy Farmers of Canada is actually a major donor to the Heart and Stroke Foundation, to Osteoporosis Canada, and to Colorectal Cancer Association of Canada.
So they paid for the ads.
Yes. So these are dairy ads that have the names of these organizations on them because they give them money. But actually, dairy is contributing largely to these diseases that these organizations are fighting so hard against.
Well, I'm actually, as much as I'm angered by how many ads I'm seeing all over the place for it, I'm grateful now because Animal Justice is taking action on this. And Animal Justice, the legislative fund in Canada, takes on so many cases that are necessary. And now people will be educated by the fact that this is making news, that they're taking this on as a complaint.
Absolutely.
Yeah, finally someone's making a complaint, because this has been going on for years and years. And for some alternative medical knowledge about dairy, I would suggest people accessing Dr. Michael Greger's nutritionfacts.org website. There's many, many free articles and videos on there, very short, very digestible videos. And you just type in dairy, and you can see that all the studies that have been done on dairy that he has analyzed and explained in layman's terms. Also, I'm currently reading his big book, How Not to Die. And yeah, dairy's a factor. It causes inflammation. And you'll learn a lot more by reading this book, How Not to Die, by Dr. Michael Greger, which is basically an encyclopedia of How Not to Die, which is by not consuming dairy and meat products.
And one more thing, if you're on YouTube and you have 5 minutes, look up Dairy is Scary. It shows you exactly what happens in the dairy industry. And after watching that, your compassionate side will come out, and there's no way you'll support that.
Maybe I'll post that on our Facebook while I have a break here. Would you like
Sounds
me to
good.
Do that? Okay.
That's great.
Animal Voices Vancouver. It'll be posted during this hour.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, you know, if you find yourself thinking about dairy as how they've advertised it all these years as this wholesome food that you need, consider the fact that this research has been around for a long time, you know, and the dairy industry still continues to actively deceive the public into believing that their product is necessary for human health, and it's not. So, you know, consider whether that's an industry that you really want to be putting your dollars toward.
You really need to look beyond the advertising of these industries, because they are for profit. So they're going slyly through a nonprofit organization backing them up. But I see that as being kind of sneaky, because I feel like they're failing in this industry, as it was noted in this article online here. According to international market research company BBC Research, the global market for dairy alternatives is exploding. I've heard that in the last several years. It's reached $5.8 billion in 2014 and expected to rise at a rate of 13.3% annually to $10.9 billion in 2009. So there is an invested interest for these for-profit companies to exploit animals and humans' health as well. And we'll actually be learning more about that in our feature interview next week with Robert Grillo, who has written a book all about these fallacies that are spewed out to us in society.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, you know, it's absurd that anybody would believe that the lactation of a completely different species is necessary to human health. That on its own is just evidence as to how absurd this lie is that they've been perpetuating for all these years.
My favorite vegan meme that I post online sometimes is, sometimes it'll show up, it's the cartoon of the cow. There's a cow that's just standing there, and her teats are full, and there's human men sucking from her teats, sucking the milk out. Now, how ridiculous does that look? And that's why I like to post it, because I think it skips over the indoctrination that we've been fed. And that's a pretty hard-hitting image to see that actually is what you're doing. Whenever I see something good online on Facebook or whatever that kind of brings out the ridiculousness of consuming dairy as humans, as adults, because we don't even need any milk products at all, even from our mother after we've been weaned, then I post it, because I feel like people don't know and they need to keep getting this out, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us.
On December 2nd, Spruce Trap will release their debut full-length album entitled The Wise Prefer to Perish through Big Smoke and Eagle Time Records.
To commemorate the release, Big Smoke is proud to present a special evening of music to celebrate community and magnificent architecture in our city
and the art scene that inspires Vancouver's cultural identity. Performances will be by Spruce Trap,
Holy Hum, and
Ian William Craig. The event takes place Friday, December 2nd at Christchurch Cathedral
at 690 Burrard Street in Vancouver, doors at 7 p.m. All right, and now for some events. Tomorrow, there will be an Earthlings Experience and Outreach event at the Vancouver Christmas Market. Tomorrow is the opening day of this year's Christmas Market down at the Convention Center downtown. And what better opportunity to raise awareness of the suffering of animals exploited for human use, particularly around the holiday season. So they'll need people to come help leaflet and hold signs and just come show support and get other people's attention. Because, you know, the more attention they're getting, the more information gets out there, the more the merrier. So volunteers are to meet at 4 p.m. at the Starbucks across from the Convention Center at 1067 Cordova. And there is an event page on Facebook with more info, but it's private. So if you'd like to get some more info on that, you can write us at Animal Voices Vancouver on Facebook, and we'll send you the link.
I'm going to write you because I missed the date, so I'm going to write you to ask you what that date was.
Yes, the date was tomorrow, Saturday, November 26th, 4 p.m. at the Convention Center downtown. Okay. And afterward, also tomorrow, there is a veg meetup dinner at the Small Flower Cafe. That's a 90% vegan cafe at 47 West Hastings in Gastown. Started up last year by the same people who run the Wallflower. They're 100% gluten-free, and they just put out a new menu. And so that includes all sorts of sandwiches, veggie melt, citrus eggplant sandwich with fresh-made cashew cheese, and potato salad, and mac and cheese, my new favorite vegan mac and cheese in town that I've tried.
You have said that before, that it's your favorite.
Yes.
You're like, I think you're a mac and cheese
connoisseur. I love mac and cheese.
Okay, so
and
you know them all. And Sinead is... is giving her props for the mac and cheese.
Yes, it's very good. And so this dinner is $19 per person. It's cash only. It's at 6:30 p.m. at the Small Flower. And there's more info on their website, meetup.com/vegvan. That's V-E-G-V-A-N. And yes, check out the Small Flower anytime because they're a cool little cafe and they're making a lot of effort to make vegan options available.
And you could go to the Vancouver Christmas Market first at 4 and then just kind of walk over to Small Flower. It's not that far away.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And there's one more event here the following weekend. Next weekend, Sunday, December 4th, is the Santa Claus Parade downtown. So Liberation BC is getting together for their annual leafleting event to raise awareness of the plight of turkeys. They're meeting at City Centre SkyTrain Station at 10:45 a.m., leafleting until about noon, and they've got a great leaflet you can view and print and share from their website as well at liberationbc.org. If you have any other animal-friendly events that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. All right, and now for some news. We'll start off with Meatless Monday. Killarney Secondary School is the latest Vancouver school to join the Meatless Monday initiative. The Vancouver Humane Society launched the Meatless Monday campaign, and it's meant to curb the consumption of animal products, obviously. And colleges and high schools and hospitals across Vancouver have joined the initiative. And so one day a week, Mondays, they get the meals in their cafeterias replaced by vegetarian meals. And three post-secondary institutions have adopted Meatless Mondays, including Capilano University, Langara College, and BCIT, and four high schools, Eric Hamber, Winston Churchill, David Thompson, and now Killarney. Killarney kicked off on November 18th with bowtie pasta, salad, and garlic bread. And it was initiated by the school's Environment Club. So that's cool. And the Environment Club is actually who started Meatless Monday at Langara as well, which was the first Vancouver-based school to adopt Meatless Mondays in 2014. And as it turns out, Chartwell's, which is the company that serves the cafeteria over at Langara, they said that since its inception, Meatless Monday has become the second most popular day of the week in the cafeteria after Indian Food Day. So how cool is that?
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Because yeah. I agree that Indian Food Day should be first. So should Meatless Monday, though. And that's, we've had Emily Pickett on the show from Vancouver Humane Society to talk about this program when they're just getting it started earlier this year. So if you want to hear more about that, you can go to animalvoices.org and search Meatless Monday. You'll see that interview with her. And I think we should have her on the show in the future to give us an update, because a lot's happened since then, as you've just mentioned.
Yeah, they've been getting a lot of schools on board, and it sounds like it's really being embraced by students, and that's a good thing. And in other news, I'll give you an update on Aurora over at the Vancouver Aquarium. As you may have heard last week, Beluga Keela died at the Vancouver Aquarium. She was 21 years old, and the cause has not been discovered or not been announced. And Aurora, her mother, who is 29 years old, she's suffering from some of the same symptoms. She remains under 24-hour care. And of course, the aquarium is playing this out like, we care so much about the belugas and we're watching her 24/7 and we'll do just about anything for her. But, you know, the CEO of the aquarium, John Nightingale, he did a Q&A with somebody on CBC Radio last week, and he said some things that I think just speak to how the aquarium really, where their priorities lie. The CBC had asked, how do you respond to critics who say that this death and this ailment is more evidence that whales don't belong at the aquarium? And the president of the aquarium's response was, To the degree I can, I urge people not to think about belugas as if they were people, which I hear a lot. Like, I couldn't imagine living in a pool like that. Well, the beluga couldn't imagine living in your living room either. Wow, you know, so I don't know how much John Nightingale would like to live in his living room for 26 years straight.
Something else that John has said publicly is, the idea that animals ought to live wild and free in nature is absolutely a human emotion, but we believe that is wrong. And who are they to decide anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
And by that logic, why don't we rescue all the animals from the wild and give them all the dental care they can get and live in a pool, which he loves to mention their dental care plan.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, this is where this guy's priorities lie. This is where the aquarium's priorities lie. Please don't support the aquarium. And also, this is a bigger time than ever. You know, they're down to their last beluga, and it's very important now that we get involved, go to protests, and let the aquarium and our municipal yeah. government know that we don't want captive whales, we don't want captive cetaceans in Vancouver.
There was a protest last night. Did you go, Sinead?
No, I was...
I heard it went well.
It's the only time I had to prepare for this show, so I didn't make it. But Jen, you heard some stuff about
it. Yeah, there were about 15 activists there, including Gary Charbonneau, the filmmaker of Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. Please look that up on YouTube. There was also an activist there who had a TV, and he was playing the latest film, short film, called Aurora's Story, which you can also find on YouTube. And it basically is, I think, maybe about 5 minutes, telling people about the life of Aurora as she was captured from the wild in 1990 at age two. She's lost three calves and a granddaughter, and she's now sick. And we know captivity kills. It's well documented.
I'm going to post that one online. I'm going to look for it.
There's going to be lots on our website today.
I just wanted to share one more quote, because I've seen these ridiculous quotes come from John Nightingale, and there's a meme about it. The idea that animals ought to live free in nature is absolutely a natural human emotion, but we believe this is wrong.
Right.
So this is the CEO of the Vancouver Aquarium saying these things.
Money, money, money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's got a pretty sad existence over there. Anytime you look over to Stanley Park, consider the fact that there is somebody sitting in a box in there that's been sitting there for 26 years watching her children die. And it's not cool. It's not a fun thing to go see on the weekend. And it's not something we want to be teaching our kids is okay.
And the number one excuse I hear from parents who support it is that it's a way to educate the children. Well, first of all, that's not how a whale behaves in the wild, so they're not learning anything. They're on antidepressants. It's terrible. And you can go home and you can put on Animal Planet, or what is it? Is it Animal Planet? Is that the DVD series?
Planet Earth.
I'm sure there's something called Animal Planet too.
Blue Planet.
They are in the wild. And then
even on your interview a couple of weeks ago with David, his sister, he said, we actually live in a place where there's there's whales in the wild, yeah. Right?
Go on a whale tour.
There's another option. Well, thank you. Thank you for the news tonight. Right.
No problem.
Next up, we're going to have our interview with Wayne Shung, the co-founder of Direct Action Everywhere, which is a grassroots animal rights liberation group. And I just want to warn everybody, I'm really sorry. Wayne and I had a pretty bad connection toward the end of the interview, so we didn't even get to properly say goodbye to him. But this is worth listening to. Lots of information in here, and let's play that interview now.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Today we will speak with Wayne Shung, founder of the grassroots animal rights group Direct Action Everywhere, also known as DXE. I've had the pleasure of meeting Wayne once and was so inspired by his dedication, passion, determination, and optimism. Wayne has organized social justice campaigns since 1999. He's rescued dozens of animals from abusive situations and has garnered media attention from major news organizations. Wayne studied behavioral science at the University of Chicago and MIT, previously served on the faculty of Northwestern School of Law, where he published research on animals. Thanks for being on the Animal Voices show, Wayne.
It's my pleasure, and I just have one small correction. I am a co-founder of DXE, and I say this all the time, and it's totally true, but I get way too much of the credit. There's so many other incredible people, and many of my co-founders, frankly, deserve more of the credit for the accomplishments we've had over the past 3 years than I do.
Okay, who are they?
People like Chris Van Breen, Priya Sahani, Brian Burns, who, frankly, is, you know, instrumental to everything we've done, and we were sad to lose him to the University of Chicago math department, but he's going on to greener pastures as a math student. But yeah, there are so many people have contributed across the world, not just the folks in the Bay Area. So it's not just the founding crew that have made DXE what it is. It's people from 130 different cities across the entire globe.
Mm-hmm. It is a big organization and growing every day, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's exciting.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how long you've been vegan and your journey into animal rights activism?
Sure. I've been vegan, you know, it depends on how you count. I started calling myself vegan in roughly 1998 or 1999, but I cheated for most of the first 2 years. Where the best vegan option I had was lettuce. I'm not really making excuses. I should have been vegan even if lettuce was the only thing I could eat, because I certainly could have gone to a grocery store and learned to cook for myself, but when I was a busy college student, every time there was ice cream or a cookie that tempted me, I tended to cheat. I'm not proud of it. I don't think people should do that, but it's certainly the way I became vegan. But what really cemented it for me was in 2001 when my first dog, the dog I grew up with, passed away. And she was old, and we knew her time had come, but she meant everything to me. And when I lost her, I knew I wanted to do something for her. And what I decided to do was to finally make 100% the vegan commitment. And that happened in 2001. So it's at least 15 years, arguably 17, depending on how you count it.
That's a long time. And so how do you spend most of your days? Are you working as a lawyer still?
I am still working as a lawyer. In fact, I'm a managing partner at a law firm. And one of the nice things about being managing partner of a admittedly very small law firm is you get to set your own schedule. So I still practice technology law. I try to help usually young grad students start their companies and figure out how to navigate these very difficult regulatory waters. It's exciting work, but the lion's share of my time is spent fighting for animals, and it's what I believe in more than anything else in the world.
And I guess everybody that you work with knows this about you.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm kind of I was going to say a one-trick pony, and I realized that's probably a speciesist metaphor. So I'll say I'm a one-trick human being. There's not a lot that's interesting in my life other than working for animals. The good thing is working for animals is not just my greatest passion, it's also my greatest joy. There's not a moment in my life where I don't feel like I'm lucky to be fighting for 99.9999% of the sentient life on this planet, and I can't imagine a better life for myself or, frankly, all the folks that I'm organizing with. We have a lot of fun together.
Good for you. And I always say to people that I feel like animal rights activism is our rent on the planet to acknowledge our privilege of being born into the human species and to have a voice and to have rights, and we should give that to the others who don't, right?
You're absolutely right. And I think human privilege is a very unexamined concept that needs to be much more examined. And everything from kind of the fact that we can walk around on the streets and usually not have to worry about whether our food is poisoned, that when we get on an airplane, we get to sit on the inside instead of getting torn up by airplanes that fly through our territory and suck in our children or our family members the way that happens to geese and other migratory birds all over the country by the thousands. And I mean, our entire society, our civilization, and increasingly our planet are engineered in a way that makes human beings dominant over all the other life forms on this planet. It's not fair. It's not right. And it's nothing that was earned. You know, the privileges that we have are completely by virtue of our birth and by virtue of the discrimination that other species on this planet face. And we have to give back some of that privilege. And I like the way you put it, that it's our rent for living on this planet.
Well, this makes me think about a cartoon that I believe you and Gary Francione created, and the analogy is of a dog being beaten. Can you tell that story for those who haven't seen the cartoon?
Sure. And I should first say that I admire Gary Francione immensely. He has been a foundational figure in the animal rights movement. Some of his work on kind of the humane myth in the 80s and 90s has laid the groundwork for a grassroots animal rights as opposed to animal welfare movement in modern times. But one area where Gary and I disagree is, you know, what Gary calls a moral baseline. Gary thinks that being vegan, meaning for the most part being a vegan consumer, not buying products of animal cruelty, not eating the flesh or secretions of animals, is the basic moral requirement that human beings should have on this planet. And you know, the way I try to think about this is, instead of looking at kind of all these animals and farms in the abstract, just imagine an individual dog right in front of you. And Gary's position is that as activists and as vegans, we should at least not be hurting the dog actively. So you imagine you're walking along the sidewalk and somebody's hurting a dog, beating a dog right in front of you. And one thing you could do if the person said, "Hey, I'm beating a dog, want to join?" is you could say, "Yeah, I'll do that. Why not? Looks fun." And obviously Gary and I and hopefully everybody on this planet would agree that that's a horrible thing to do and you shouldn't do it. If someone's hurting a dog, the least you could do is not join in. But Gary would argue, and I would agree, that we should do something beyond just not joining in, that we should, you know, maybe say something. But Gary's perspective is that not participating actively in the violence is sufficient morally to exhaust the obligations we have to that dog. And this is where he and I disagree. I think that if there's a dog in front of you being beaten and you have the power and the privilege to do something about it, at a minimum, say something, but maybe even actively and physically intervene to help that dog, to give the dog some veterinary care, give them food and water and shelter, then as activists and as vegans, we have an obligation to go beyond just non-participation in that violence, but active intervention to stop that violence. And this is the difference between conceiving of veganism as the moral baseline and activism as a moral baseline. I think when you are the beneficiary of some form of privilege, when you're the beneficiary of a system of supremacy, human supremacy, that has dominated another class of beings for at least 10,000 years, you have some obligation to give some of that privilege and power back by actively intervening in the system of oppression that's subjecting these innocent victims to unspeakable violence. So we have to be activists, not just vegans.
I agree. Absolutely. It's really difficult to encourage a lot of people to become activists. I feel that they don't like confrontation. And I have to admit that there is a lot of confrontation and negativity within being an activist. But there's also a lot of greatness that comes from it. And you just said earlier that you love being an activist and the community that it brings to you. And we have somebody on the show today.
Yeah, there could be nothing better.
Yeah, we have somebody on the show today, Carrie, and she will be discussing how she has been meat-free for a month now. She's a friend of mine, and I've convinced her to watch a couple of documentaries about animals, such as Earthlings and Food Choices, and I'm hoping that she goes fully vegan soon and even becomes an activist. So what kind of advice would you give to her?
First, that's awesome, and congratulations to Carrie and to you on that transition. Every time I meet a new vegetarian or vegan, especially new activists, it excites me about the potential for change for the entire world. And second, the advice I give to pretty much every new activist I meet is, what is your passion? What do you believe in more than anything else? What is the talent you want to develop? What is the thing that drives you so much that when you're doing it, you forget about time? You forget about your basic bodily functions. I mean, all of us have been in this state at times where We're so enamored by book, movie, a form of music, an instrument that we love to play, that time just stops. And this is where you're going to be at your best, when you find the intersection of your passion and activism. So for some people, that's protesting. And when they're organizing protests, participating in protests, they feel alive in a way that they never otherwise do. For others, it might be behind the scenes work. You know, I'm a huge fan of everyone who does all the incredibly difficult sanctuary work, the animal care work that sometimes takes 5, 10, 15 years of caretaking to ensure some non-human victim of violence is given the life they deserve. And it's often not as acknowledged, it's not as sexy, but for some people, that's their passion, and they need to find it and develop it. So, and while not everything we can do will be always exceptionally interesting, exceptionally exciting, I think all of us have something to contribute. And finding that intersection between what we personally have to contribute, what we're excited by, what skill we have, what talent we have, and what's great for the animals is where is the sweet spot at which we will find a sustainable and effective role for ourselves in the movement for animals.
I like what you said about how there's many roles, because you're right, there are so many roles that don't involve any confrontation at all or any braveness to go in and disrupt, such as what DXE does quite a bit. And actually, it was one of the first demonstrations I ever did when I became vegan nearly 2 years ago. I went into Whole Foods with the Vancouver group and we disrupted the meat department. And that's a big part of what Direct Action Everywhere does. And for those who are listening that don't know, if you want to just briefly explain that along with your open rescue.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it's probably the thing we're most known for, nonviolent disruption. And the reason we do it is quite frankly, it's an effective tool in the arsenal of social justice activists. One of the most famous scholars of social movements, Sidney Taro, writes, disruption is the strongest weapon of social movements because it allows us to leverage a small amount of material resources into a huge amount of attention and dialogue. And when you're on the right side of an issue of justice, your need of transparency, of dialogue, of discussion, you're favored, you're advantaged by having a conversation, because you should have the confidence that if we have that conversation, we get the issue onto the table, the world will eventually come around to our position. And I think that's where we are with animal rights. When you look at 95% of people, when they're actually forced to confront an animal confined in a crate so small they can't stand up or turn around, an animal who's mutilated, who's taken from their family and killed at 1/10, 1/30 of their natural loss, the majority of decent, kind-hearted human beings on this planet are horrified by these things. So the problem isn't so much that people are evil or they lack compassion. It's they don't even have to confront the issue at all, because there are systems of oppression at work that are independent of any individual's choice. And so the power of nonviolent disruption is it forces a society that has ignored an issue to confront that issue and have a dialogue. And again, if we're confident that we're right about animal rights, if we're right that animals ought not be tortured and used and killed and slaughtered and consumed, then we should have the confidence in our message that if we have that conversation, we will succeed. So our task then is not to persuade every individual on the street one by one, but rather to create a public dialogue, a public crisis, public media attention that is so overwhelming that everyone in the country is forced to stop for a moment and think about the animals who are being used and killed for our meals, for our dinners, our lunches, and our breakfasts. Mm-hmm. So nonviolent disruption disrupts business as usual. And as social justice activists, stopping business as usual is our first and frankly foremost task.
And for those people who don't know much about your organization, I just want to say that DXE targets Whole Foods quite a lot. And if people wonder why that is, it's because they spend so much money on their marketing campaign talking about humane meat and humane eggs. And DXE activists actually get onto farms that do supply Whole Foods and find that their welfare policies are just really lies. Can you talk about the most recent investigation onto a turkey farm that supplies Whole Foods?
Absolutely. So we went to Jandal Turkey Farms, which is a Whole Foods supplier in the eastern United States, and interestingly, also supplies the President of the United States and has been doing so for most of the past 50 years. And this is a renowned farm. It's received awards from the Humane Society. It's known for being in the top 2% of animal welfare. the owner of the farm talks about how humanely raised the animals are, and it's marketed as free range in Whole Foods stores across the eastern United States. And what we found is that it was no different than every other industrial farm in this country around the world. It was a hellhole. There were animals who were mutilated, animals being eaten alive, animals rotting to death. 10+% of the animals died even before they reached slaughter. None of these animals, as far as we can, were ever getting outside, yet they market the products as humane and free range. And the reality that consumers are increasingly forced to confront is that no matter how you dress it up, no matter how nice the package looks, animal agriculture is inherently violent. And this is an inescapable fact that the industry needs to run from. They need to pretend that is not the case. And that is why they market their products so aggressively at places like Whole Foods, because they know that the public does not want to see animals tortured and killed. And when they see animals being tortured, little baby animals like Avery, who was starving and crippled, a little baby turkey at Jandal Farms, who we rescued just a few weeks ago, when they see stories like Avery's, they're horrified and they want it to stop. And so the industry has to lie, and that's exactly what they do. And the only thing that will stop them from lying, all they admit these acts of violence and fraud, is for activists to expose the truth to the world. And that is exactly what DXC and the DXC Open Rescue Network do. We expose the violence behind closed doors and rescue as many of these victims as we can from lies of suffering and violence.
And I love that it's open rescue. And for those who don't know what that means that you don't hide your faces, right?
That's right. We believe in hiding our faces. We believe that we are on the right side of history. And therefore, we're happy to have the firm scrutinize our actions and even our identities. And if they want to challenge us in the court of public opinion or the court of law, we're happy to face that challenge because we believe what we're doing is completely justified. So I anticipate at some point there will be prosecutions that happen, and I invite those prosecutions because I believe that the American public, though only 1 to 2% are vegan and maybe 3 to 4% are vegetarian, even people who eat animals are horrified by the violence that's happening inside these farms and will rally behind us when they see us rescuing these individual animals from unspeakable torment.
Mm-hmm. And for those who think that they may know the farmer down the street, and we've all heard this argument, there is no humane way to take a life of someone who doesn't have a choice in the matter. And if they did, surely they would say no to someone taking their life for food. Our guest today is a Vancouver local, Carrie Badeski, who has recently been inspired to adopt a more compassionate lifestyle by transitioning to a vegetarian diet and would love to eventually go fully vegan. Welcome, Carrie. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So can you tell us what your inspiration was to adopt a new lifestyle?
I can't really say there was one specific instance. It's just been a long time coming of documentaries that I've been watching about animal cruelty and how cowspiracy, how everything with the whole meat and dairy industry is just causing so much harm to the world. And it's actually not even healthy for you. Mm-hmm. And I've been eating vegetarian for over a month now, and I feel so much better than I did when I was eating meat.
In what ways?
Health-wise. My digestion is better. I've always struggled with digestion. I just always feel like I have more energy now.
I hear that a lot from people.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to relate to because I have a lot of fiber in my diet and always have, but a lot of people I've seen being meat eaters saying that their digestion improves, and it's because of the increased fiber. And it's a simple change to make, isn't it? That reaps huge results.
Vegetarian is actually a pretty easy transition, or easier than I thought it was going to be. There are vegetarian options everywhere.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. And they're cheaper. What were you saying to me earlier about restaurants?
I said the first time I went out for sushi after being vegetarian, I was like, seriously, $10? That's all?
What were you spending before?
Upwards of probably $25, $30 for a single person. Because I ate sashimi all the time. That's the most expensive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, no.
You're educating us now. Okay.
Yeah. Friends before have said to me, oh, I can't afford to go for sushi today. And I'm going, really? But it's only like 10 or 12 bucks, you know? And you go, oh, right. But you're getting all the meaty things, you know? Yeah. There are other options.
I can get full-on sushi for $7. It is the cheapest. A vegan diet is the cheapest diet in the world.
And people do love their sushi in Vancouver. So if you're mm-hmm. hearing this, try going for the veggie sushi. It'll be more affordable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was wondering, Carrie, are there many other people in your life who abstain from animal products? Or is veganism and vegetarianism more like a foreign concept to them? Would you say that that a lot of people around you are aware of the ethical and environmental concerns surrounding animal products?
Absolutely. I have a lot of friends who are either vegetarian or vegan or have eaten vegan before, have family who are more switching to, even my dad actually is eating less and less meat, partially due to me in the last month too.
Right on.
But
I love your dad. I just want to say hi if you're listening.
Yeah, Jen met my dad a few months ago when he came out to visit. But I'm slowly, I think, having an impact on people that are close to me too, the more that I talk about reasons why I went vegetarian.
Right on. That's good to hear. Yeah, sometimes it starts, at least in my life anyway, it starts to feel like, am I the only one who's talking about these issues in the circles of people that... So it's cool to hear that you've got people in your life who are paying attention. And what do you think needs to happen to raise more awareness of these issues? You know, what needs to happen to help people to participate in helping to change these things?
People just need to get over the fact that there's... like so stuck in their ways.
Superiority complex? Yeah. Because we're discussing that on the show next. Right? we'll learn all about this superiority complex as to how humans think that we are so much better than animals and therefore mm-hmm. we have a right to use, abuse, and kill them and consume them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big thing to get over. What was it that made you, I don't know where you're coming from, but what was it that made you make the leap? Like, what was your moment?
Honestly, Jen asked me this earlier. I didn't really have an aha moment. It's just been a buildup of like all the documentaries that I've been watching.
Yeah. What documentaries?
Earthlings is a big one. Right. Cowspiracy is a huge one. Right. Recently, I just watched Food Choices too, which
is a great film. It just came out.
Yeah, it's new on Netflix. It's great. I convinced my dad to watch it.
What did your dad think?
He loved it. Him and his girlfriend watched it. And honestly, since then, they have decided that they're eating like 90% vegetarian, like more plants than anything else in their diet. They're trying to cut out like gluten and a lot of animal products.
It was all as easy as the power of the film, because I actually changed my parents as well by showing them a similar health-related film. And then there's Forks Over Knives, too, which is very similar to Food Choices, which I have found has shifted many people's lifestyles because they just mm-hmm. they were taught the information and they got it. And it's like it's to our benefit, right? We all want to be healthier, don't we? Some people don't, but I think most do. Mm-hmm. We all want to live longer and we all want to be rid of these pains that we had, like just common things like inflammation and arthritis and dairy, things that dairy allergies causes, and like your digestion. Can help so many different ailments just by eating pure and whole foods.
Yeah, plants make you way less bloated than animal products do.
Carrie, have I sent you the YouTube link? Dr. Michael Greger, his speech is called The Leading Causes of Death in a Vegan Diet.
I don't think so. No,
that's a really good one. If somebody won't watch Earthlings because they know it's graphic, they will watch that and they will learn how many diseases can be either cured or prevented with a vegan diet. It's
a
incredible.
Great talk, too. I've seen him do it in person, and I videoed it, too. So really, really good talk to look at.
I love Dr. Greger. His mm-hmm. website is nutritionfacts.org, everybody. Check it out.
For sure. Yeah, actually, some of his videos and also Forks Over Knives, I showed that to a friend of mine, and when he was watching it, I thought, oh, I don't know if he's paying attention. Maybe it's just, maybe he's just not really into it or whatever. And I thought, oh, okay, well, whatever. Maybe I should have waited to show it to him another time. And but then within the next couple of days, I overheard him talking with other people about the film, saying, did you know that all these people, they had these diseases and they were having all these operations and then they just changed their diet and all these things went away? And so it's cool because sometimes the films, they can, and any information you put out there, they can have more of an effect than you even realize.
Yeah, and Dr. Greger's book, How Not to Die, that I was talking about before, it has made the, I believe it's made the New York Times bestseller list when it was, since it's been published a year ago. So people are really into that. It's a really great encyclopedia to really become educated on how foods heal and also how foods can hurt, because he dissects all these studies that have ever been done and gives very scientific information that can only, you know, further your choice into this direction of eating plant-based.
If any of your doctors aren't open to your plant-based lifestyle, I would suggest to them that they check him out, because nobody can argue with a doctor like a doctor.
Yeah, I actually want to give my naturopath his book. Like, she hasn't heard of it, but she's very veggie friendly, and I just feel like every doctor should read this book, because they don't have time to go through all these studies. They're all in one place, and they're organized by the top 15 leading causes of death, chapter by chapter.
That's right. He and his volunteers go through 200 of the latest studies on health and nutrition every single day, and they make them into easy to understand for lay people videos on his website, nutritionfacts.org. And you can search any topic you want and something will come up.
So, Carrie, we've talked about a book here. I'm wondering, have you read any books that have influenced you into vegetarianism or animal rights issues?
Not per se. Not that I can really think of.
Can we? Yeah, go ahead.
I have read a couple books more like yoga based, like Buddha's Brain, just like teaching you to be compassionate and mm-hmm. just like live a more humble life, which fits in very well with the vegetarian.
I always
vegan
say
lifestyle.
I follow the Buddhist principle of ahimsa, which is to do the least harm, mm-hmm. and that's really what veganism is. So, can we give Carrie some book suggestions?
Let's do it. Write them down. Go. She's got her pen in her hand.
Go. So you have How Not to Die. It's an encyclopedia. I have to warn you. It's been taking me almost a year to read.
Okay.
Okay, someone else should go.
Okay, Vicento Molina's book. She's a local Vancouver nutritionist and dietitian and vegan, I think, for about 40 years.
Many years.
Her book is called...
she has many
Going
books.
Going Vegan?
Becoming Vegan.
Becoming Vegan. Yeah. That one is so interesting. I'm actually summarizing it into point form notes that I can give people.
That's a good book to read if you want to learn about nutritional benefits and kind of like how to nutritionally go vegan. Mm-hmm. If you're already, you know, if some people need that, I read it just for extra information. And I buy that book whenever I see it used. I actually bought it a few weeks ago at a book sale. And I can bring it for you, Carrie. Actually, you can have my copy, because I buy books to give to people. Darn it. I should have thought about that. But I'll pass it on to Jen.
Do you know what it's useful for? Is when I get into... Carrie hasn't reached this point of the vegan lifestyle yet, but she will. And it's people going, yeah, but what about protein? And yeah, but what about B12? And when I first went vegan, I didn't know how to answer these. You can go through her book, looking mm-hmm. through the index, look up B12, find out where we get it and why we are supposedly only getting it from animals, which is the common myth, and how much protein you need. I learned that I need between 40 and 50 grams of protein a day. People should be more concerned about how much vitamin D we're getting than protein.
Those are two very good points, and it's covered in the book, right? It's been a long time since I've read it. What about you, Sinead? Do you have a book?
Well, I actually, for a while, I've been meaning to read this. I just started reading Eating Animals, and we've been talking about
that's a really great book.
Nutritional aspects of our plant-based diets, vegan, vegetarianism, you know. But yeah, we are animal voices. And it's Eating Animals is a great book to just sort of educate
by Jonathan Safran Foer.
Yeah, Jonathan Safran Foer, and yeah. and just talking about it from the animal's perspective.
And from his perspective, too, which is what I really like, because he has a really different take on things. Like, the way his mind works is like, you feel like you're reading someone who you can really relate to, mm-hmm. and all the stuff he writes makes sense. And he kind of, I've seen all this information before, but he really provides it in a different and perhaps more accessible way than other books. So yeah. that's a good one to read.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, I have one. The Gentle Barn by Ellie Lacks.
Oh, yes.
And my friend's yeah. mom went vegan because of this, and she was really? A difficult one to veganize because she doesn't want to watch anything graphic. And it's just stories of animals rescued from the farm industry. We had Ellie Lacks on the show about a month ago. Carrie, I'll send you the interview. It's awesome. Okay. And I just want to talk about websites, too, because Vegan for Sidekick sure. is amazing. It's hilarious. I've oh, already yeah. sent it to Carrie. She chose our feature cartoon for this show. It's on animalvoices.org. It's hilarious. So Vegan Sidekick is a British fellow who's probably... He's quite young. He seems like he's under 30. And he makes hilarious cartoons depicting vegans having debates with meat eaters. And the meat eaters are always losing their minds and having emotional hissy fits. And the vegans are very logical. And it's just so funny because we've all been there. And then the other thing that this website is so great for is it has a section called Frequently Asked Questions. And there must be like 100 of the mm-hmm. common arguments against veganism and logical answers. So Carrie, when you find yourself in a discussion like this with somebody, look it up on your phone, search for that question and go, here you go. I don't have the time to debate with you.
So I have to give like my number one book recommendation okay. before we end this, because this is a book that I buy at used bookstores. I'll give you one, Carrie. And it's Diet for a New America by John Robbins. It was written in 1986, had a huge impact on people around the world, in which they congregated and formed the group national organization and international to Earth Save Canada. I used to work at Earth Save Canada years ago. So the it's all about the nutritional, ethical, and environmental reasons to pursue a plant-based diet. And it, again, John Robbins is such, he's written many books. He's such a good writer. And again, it's like so easy to take in his words and to learn, understand. He tells lots of stories, gives lots of information, all in a very accessible manner. So I'll bring that book for you. He's written lots of other books too. The sequel to that is Food Revolution, which is very similar, but it just a bit more updated. And even though this book was written in 1986, I find that all the things he's talking about still applies today. So very, very relevant. I call it a must-read book.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So many books to read.
Yeah.
You have a flight coming up. It's perfect.
I have a few flights coming
up. Yeah, great. And Sinead, you've got a question?
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, I think I got more of a comment, you know, that I sort of like to tell... But like share with anybody who's just starting to explore the idea of going vegetarian or vegan. And that's just, if you find yourself struggling with it, and if you find yourself debating whether an animal product is actually that bad, just ask yourself, you know, if it causes suffering and it isn't necessary, then can it really be considered ethical? You know, am I comfortable paying to have someone killed for a product that is actually detrimental to my own health and survival, you know? Killing for something you don't need to survive. That's been a thing that's really helped me to stick through. And that just sort of leads me to one more question that I actually had for you, because one of the ways we learn to empathize with animals is having animals when we're growing up. And I wondered if you grew up with any companion animals.
Yeah, I grew up with cats. My family always had cats growing up. I've also had like a bunny rabbit, which died from a wolf attacking it or something. And also my grandma lived right next to a chicken farm when I was growing up, and I was like allowed to like take a little chicken home, and I like raised him for a couple weeks, but then it went back to the farm and apparently became somebody's dinner. So.
Yeah, that's the thing, hey?
Yeah. So I guess we'll end with one final question. And I always ask people this after they've watched Earthlings and a whole bunch of documentaries. What do you feel is your hesitation in going fully vegan?
Honestly, the biggest thing is just there's not enough options. They're just
when you're out.
When I'm out, when I'm out and travel. So I travel for work quite a bit. Like I'm on the road, a couple days a week.
Where do you travel to?
All over BC, and up.
Gotta pack your own food.
That's the thing. But I'm not home very often, so packing food for 2 days while you're on the road is
challenging.
Very challenging.
I don't think it's challenging because if I think something's challenging, I make it easier. I go to Whole Foods and buy wraps and sandwiches to take with me on trips or other prepared. They have like lots of other prepared foods there too, like salads and that. That's what I would do. And I have done short trips too where I bring my food with me. I didn't make it. I just spent 5 minutes in the grocery store buying it.
Yeah, I'm just going to defend Carrie quickly though because she works so much. She's got a few jobs. And I have traveled as a full vegan and I've been cursing airports because the only thing they have is maybe a banana.
Don't buy at the airport. Yeah. Buy beforehand to take on the plane.
It can be tough when you're traveling. Yeah. But Carrie's making a really good effort and I thank her so much. And she does not remind me of any of the people depicted in the cartoons on Vegan Sidekick, which you expect when you try to veganize someone. So you're a good sport, Carrie. Thanks so much. I know you'll get there. Thanks. We're always here for you. We'd love to have you back on a future show and see how you're going.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for that. You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show. That'll be next Friday, December the 2nd. We have a great feature interview lined up for you. We'll be speaking with author and activist Robert Grillo on his brand new book called Farm to Fable, The Fictions of Our Animal Consuming Culture. So we chatted about some of these ideas that we'll be exploring on the show next week. And this is the cultural forces that drive our food choices and the reasons for the notion that we, human society, have a right to consume non-human animals. We'll also have a discussion on the cultural hegemony of this trend that seems to be going on these days in restaurants of eating live animals. So we here at Animal Voices, we want to connect with you online. Animal Voices is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts. You can subscribe to our show blog with detailed links and also subscribe to us via iTunes. We're on there as well. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Look on there today for some posts that we said we would put up. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or on email. You can email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So for today's song, we are going to be playing a song. It's called I Want It All from the movie called True Cost. It's by Natalie Taylor. And this is a song about human greed and overconsumption. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
So tight, I won't let anyone get in my way.